This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 99 for the week beginning Monday, the 21st of December, 2009, the shortest day of the year. But we will bring light into that darkness, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere, in which case it's the longest day of the year, in which case we'll just exacerbate the light that's already there. I'm Andy Zaltzman in the snow-submerged city of London, buried under literally 2 centimetres of snow and ground to its characteristically shit British halt. And in the tropical paradise of New York City, John the Hat Man Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Well, you say that, Andy, but apparently there's 2 feet of snow coming here this weekend.
Really?
So suck on that.
Today in London,
yeah.
I mean, there was, literally, it's the kind of blizzard that humanity's never really seen. It was like an ice age leaving 2 centimetres of snow on the ground.
Well, judging by the public, a very gentle ice age.
There were about the same number of trains running today in London as there were during the last ice age. So I can only equate it to that. What it must have been like, those 2 centimetres of snow.
Well, the big news for me and for the world this week, Andy, is that I may soon be able to play football again.
Oh, wow.
The show may be entering a team into a casual local league, which would play early next year. Obviously, this is great news for me, even better news for football. The problem is, Andy, that, to be honest, hand on heart, I've been talking a pretty big game here since I arrived. And, you know, being European, there is also a certain assumption that I'm incredible. Now, obviously, I'm excellent, but well, I wouldn't go so far as to call myself incredible. Outstanding, yes. Sublime, sure, occasionally. But incredible, that's for others to say.
Limited, I'd say.
I would not say that.
You shirk a challenge, you know. You're easily knocked out of the game with a big early hit.
Absolutely not true. And when you add the spice of the US-England new-founded World Cup rivalry, I think you're adding a whole extra dimension of pressure to this whole affair.
So this is the 99th full edition of The Bugle, the world's longest-running audio newspaper for visual world. So long-running, in fact, that I can no longer say those words without slightly slurring like Boris Yeltsin. Who would have thought, John, 20 years ago that we'd be sitting here now recording the 99th Bugle?
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't be. Yeah. We wouldn't have been able to process having the capacity to do that technologically.
That's right.
Really. Also, I was 12 at the time, Andy. I didn't know you.
No, we'd never met. Wouldn't meet for 8 or 10 years, I guess.
Also, at that point in my life, I was definitely considering a career as a footballer, not a comedian.
Right.
When I say considering, I mean fantasising about.
Sounds like you still are.
Okay, that is technically true.
You're just using The Daily Show as a stepping stone to becoming
just
a
whatever
professional
it takes.
Football player.
Whatever it takes, Andy.
So this is a historic Bugle for a number of reasons, of course. It's the last ever two-digit Bugle. The last Bugle to take place in a year containing consecutive zeros for at least the next 90 years and 2 weeks. The only ever Bugle that will be recorded in the week of the 218th anniversary of the Bill of Rights becoming part of US law.
It's
or
history.
On the 45th birthday of wrestling legend Stone Cold Steve Austin. Also the first ever Bugle whose number sounds like a conversation in a Berlin cafe in which an English-speaking tourist tries to order a round of hot beverages for an Oxford boat race crew in their cocks, but is refused. 99! Also the first...
Oh, that's no way to say goodbye to double digits.
Also the first Bugle to contain either the word Zamponga or indeed any reference to any form of Italian bagpipe variant. That's what the Zamponga is. I like to think this is an educational podcast.
I keep thinking that.
Or to contain reference to the chemical element hafnium, the cheeky little tetravalent transition metal with an atomic number of 72, used in the production of control rods for nuclear reactors, which was, of course, named after the Cleveland Indians baseball player Travis Hafner. Sorry, I've drifted away again. As always, some sections of the Bugle going straight in the bin. This week, the first in a series of free Bugle Christmas threats. Intimidate friend and foe alike with our seasonal provocation, scientifically proven to be 50% more disquieting than the average threat. And here is number one threat. I will summon the vengeful furies of the underworld to pursue you during your every waking moment until the prospect of death seems a blessed relief from the abominable strafing of those unconquerable beasts, who will stop at naught until they taste your warm blood on their cornflakes of hatred, whose very existence is concerned with nothing but your total destruction, who will not rest their vengeful limbs until you have been cast into a chasm of nothingness if you don't stop singing those carols. Come on, shoo, clear off, and you're not getting a mince pie. Also in the bin, does Britain have a future? In the week in which London has ground to a halt 2 to 2 centimetres of snow, and in which 19 million people watch the final of the amateur karaoke competition The X Factor, we ask, was the sacrifice our forefathers made in two world wars really worth the effort?
Top story this week. Well, Andy, there's only one story we could go with. Yes, Copenhagen seems to have stalled. Yes, the war in Afghanistan rages on. Yes, healthcare in America seems to be taking steps backwards rather than forwards. But all that pales into insignificance when placed next to this. Silvio Berlusconi being punched in the face news now! Did I dream this, Andy? Did this really happen? Did someone really punch Silvio Berlusconi in the face with a ceramic ornamental cathedral? Am I in a coma, Andy? Was I hit on the head and have I been hallucinating the last few days? Or did someone really hit Silvio Berlusconi in the face with a small pottery cathedral?
I don't think he punched him in the face. I think they threw it at him.
But
it was definitely wanging.
Yeah, it only just left contact with the guy's hand, though.
The extraordinary thing about this story, John, is that when you first heard the words Silvio Berlusconi has been smashed in the face with a small replica of Milan Cathedral, you just weren't that surprised. Well, I mean, any other world leader, any other person in the world being smashed in the face with a small replica of Milan Cathedral, you'd have thought, well, that's crazy. What on earth happened? How did that come to pass? But with Berlusconi, you thought, I bet they did. In fact, the surprising thing for me, John, it has taken 73 years for someone to smash Silvio Berlusconi in the face with a replica of Milan Cathedral.
Andy, some say they see God in a rainbow, or in a child's smile, or that they look at the Grand Canyon and think a higher power must have done this. For me, I see it in this story. And I tell you what would have been really weird, and that if anyone at the exact moment that that happened was experiencing a moment of religious doubt, a crisis of faith, and who looked to the heavens like George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life whispering, give me a sign, Lord. Just give me a sign. And who then turned on the news to hear, Silvio Berlusconi was hit in the face by a ceramic cathedral. They must have dropped to their knees and said, thank you, Lord. I have seen your face. Now I am a believer.
But what I want to know, John, and what hasn't been reported in the press, is at that exact moment, what was happening in the real Milan Cathedral? Was everyone there just enveloped by a glorious rapture? As it turned out, this was, in fact, a voodoo Milan Cathedral. A great light shined upon it.
Obviously, Andy, you cannot condone an action like this happening. There's no excuse for violence. But the problem is, this is very funny. Now, for instance, I broke my nose while filming something for The Daily Show when I first got here. I was the first to say it was funny. You know, we used it on the show because it was funny. Silvio has a responsibility now, a human responsibility to sack up and do the same. Admit that, yes, while it hurt, it was undeniably, irrefutably hilarious.
I broke my wrist playing football, you may
funny.
Remember.
Funny injury.
When our friend and comedic colleague Daniel Kitson... Yes. Belted a ball at me from about 4 yards away. I stuck my hand. I was in goal to save it, and it broke my wrist. And he followed up by shouting the words, take that, you Jew.
It was a hate crime. It was a slapstick hate crime.
Yeah, it was all meant in good spirit and taken as such whilst I went to hospital. I mean, to an objective observer, that could have looked bad. Anyway. Oh. Another surprising thing, John, was Berlusconi's reaction, which was basically to say, how could people do this? Which suggests, was, as you say, for a start, he doesn't have a sense of humour, but also that he doesn't read the papers, is also fully amnesiac, and has also never thought that tourist souvenirs of major churches would be used as close combat missiles, of which only the last one is acceptable.
lots of the reactions in Italy seem to be mixed feelings on the lines of course, this is absolutely terrible, but it is Silvio Berlusconi being hit by a miniature cathedral. One Italian responded by saying, I don't like to say he deserved it, but he had to expect it.
That is semantics, isn't it?
If I can just slightly jump to Silvio's defence here, I don't know if he, as a busy man, you know, with a full day of running a country and committing fraud, I don't know how he can be constantly on the lookout for flying cathedrals. I think you ask too much of him there. His initial reaction, Berlusconi, was to stand on the floor of his car above the crowd to show everyone that he was all right. The problem was there was quite a lot of blood, which meant that his gesture was not having the effect that he aimed for. Instead, everyone was looking at him thinking, no, you're not all right. It looks from here like some of your face is coming off. He also said that he hoped that this attack would prompt a calmer, more honest language in Italian politics. That's a bit rich, seeing as he's very much neither of those things. He's not calm, he's crazy, and he's not honest, he's a career criminal. Not just a liar, an old-fashioned crook. Also, no one wants Italian politics to be calm or honest. Just like they don't want Italian politics to be not sexist. You'd be ripping the heart out of it. It'd be like saying that boxing should stop having anyone getting punched in the face. It'd just be two people in the middle of a ring standing looking awkwardly at each other.
There is more chance, as you say, of them stopping riding mopeds and honking their horns at attractive women. So we have to ask, John, was this the first in a new wave of tourist souvenir-based assassination attempts? I mean, obviously not the first. William McKinley, the US president, of course, famously shot with a bullet in the shape of the Niagara Falls, whilst Julius Caesar was, in fact, stabbed with a miniature Eiffel Tower.
Berlusconi's full quote was, if, after it happened, there's a better awareness of the need for calmer and more honest language in Italian politics, this pain will not have been in vain. These last days, I have felt that even some political opposition leaders have come closer. That's true, Silvio. They have all come together in gathering around their computers, watching it time and time again, laughing their faces off. Also, I do like the idea that he sees his suffering as being for the greater good. He's like Jesus, Andy. He sacrificed his face so that we all may benefit. And I wonder if he'd be willing to keep doing this if he felt it would actually help humanity. If someone said to him, the world would be a better place if you are regularly smashed in the face by a replica house of worship, would he step up to the plate?
Take a synagogue in the eye, Berlusconi.
First out of the blocks were the Prime Minister's critics in terms of reaction around the world. By the following morning, more than 20,000 had signed up to a Facebook page giving hero status to the alleged attacker, Massimo. I can't believe they're still... I can't believe they're still saying alleged attacker when he's on video throwing a cathedral at him. Massimo Tartaglia was his name, and he's now has more than 70,000 fans. He has become like the Iraq shoe thrower. The problem was that reactions quickly got out of hand. One enemy of the Prime Minister left a note saying, death to Berlusconi. Obviously, that is over the top. You don't want death for him. You want him to be hit by more cathedrals in the face. And from one of his defenders, there was the reaction, I'd like to wash my feet in the blood of communists. Where to begin? First, that's a terrible way to wash your feet. Terrible.
Well, some people say it's good for corns and bunions.
It's not good, Andy.
Stalin used to swear by it. No, that explains everything.
That much is true. You're going to find that when you finish, your feet are the opposite of clean. In fact, they are stained with communist blood. And you've just walked the blood of communists all across your brand new carpet, which is just what those commies would have wanted. The point is, this story is inspirational, Andy. For John Keats, his muse was a Grecian urn. For us, it is Silvio Berlusconi's face being caved in by a cathedral. Well, it's the last Bugle of the year, and you can tell from the tone in my voice what is about to be unleashed. Open the gates of hell. Let the smoke clear. Put out the flames! The American is here!
Kaboom, baby. What's up, everybody?
There you go. Well, wow.
Good ding.
Ticked a lot of boxes there.
Good ding. Let's do it.
Good ding. Stop saying good ding.
Hey, world. Good ding. No, get ready.
I explicitly said don't say that again.
I'm going to just real quick. Before I respect what you just said. Yeah. But good ding, everybody.
Happy holidays, American.
I don't say that. I say Merry Christmas. I don't go for that generic crap.
It's just, I mean, do you not think it's more inclusive just to say Happy Holidays?
Not really. I mean...
Well, it is. I mean, it is more inclusive to say that.
Well, not for Christians, it's not.
You're right, it isn't for that.
It's actually less inclusive to Christians. Right. I'd rather say happy every holiday to each person so they all feel special. I'll lump everybody in one group of crap.
Oh, right, so you'll just take a guess based on appearance, going, yeah. Well, I'm guessing yeah. Happy Hanukkah you can, by the toot-toot.
Yeah, you can spot a Jew, yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, let's be honest. Look, I live in the Northeast, I can spot a Jew. You know? To my left eye, really, that doesn't. My right eye doesn't pay much attention.
That is interesting that your left eye has Judah, your right eye doesn't.
Judah, yeah.
That's because of the way they had to hold the hammers when they were working in Egypt.
That's right.
It was very much a
is that right,
strong
Andy?
Left eye stance.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
It goes back, it goes way back.
I think you become a worse Jew every week, Andy.
Here's an interesting thing about Andy. Mm-hmm. I never get to really see Andy because he's over wherever you guys are from.
I mean, it's England. It's England.
Yeah,
it's...
I don't know, France, wherever.
No, but, I mean, it's not France. That's a different country.
I don't have an ear to spot a Jew. To me, Andy, he sounds like, you know, he could be going to church every Sunday. But
really?
I'm sure if I saw him, I go, oh, yeah, Jew.
Not even your left ear?
You know, the truth is, with all the rock and roll music I listen to, my ears ain't what they used
really?
To be. Yeah.
When you walk into a room with your oversized headphones on, what is spilling out of that?
Well, it depends on my mood. I mean, generally, I'm going to open up my morning, like any time my alarm goes off, it's going to be someone from the Rat Pack singing a good song.
Okay.
If I don't hear Dean Martin before I get in the shower, it's not a good day. And then, you know, later in the day, I'll listen to something a little bit more tame, maybe some Sinatra.
I mean, it's basically classic standards by crooners.
Good music, I like
okay.
to call it.
So, American, it's end of a year, end of a decade. How's this year been for America?
I got to be honest with you, it hasn't been our best year.
It hasn't been our best year. That was what I was trying to couch in the question. You've had a bad, bad year this year.
Let's just put it in perspective. A bad year for us is still a great year for any other country.
Well, for Burundi, yes.
No. Across the board, any country in the world, we have a bad year. Their year is definitely worse. In other words, it's a pretty simple equation. When you're number one and you slip down to number three, everybody else slips down below three. So three becomes one.
What? Hold on. That's not an
equation.
You
know what I'm saying?
That's just words with some numbers thrown in.
Nah, it's math.
No,
there's a
sure
math principle. I think it's Zelig's principle or something. I forget what the guy's name.
Really?
But basically it's like...
It's actually getting vague.
Whatever the top is becomes lower than the top, but the top overall just lowers, so everyone's still below the
top.
Yeah,
that literally makes less sense than when you were just arbitrarily throwing numbers in there.
All right, let me clarify this.
Yeah.
Okay. Say there's 10 countries in the world.
Okay, now I'm with you.
I know there's like 9,000, but say there's 10.
We're saying there's 10. Good.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're number one, obviously, on the 10. Let's say number two.
For the sake
on that
of the
list.
Exercise, yeah.
Let's say number two on that list is, I don't even know who'd be two. Germany, I guess?
No.
They did it right.
No, you're thinking the early 1900s. China.
All right. Yeah, I guess the Chinese do. Okay. So just for argument's sake, I'll say China because I don't want to get into why they're why they're not really two.
Okay.
Canada is 10.
Okay. They were lucky to make the 10,
yeah,
but still.
I mean, that was nice. I did that to be nice because it's Christmas time. So now we slide down. We slide down to three.
Yes.
China, which used to be two, now becomes four. And there is no longer a one and a two. There's just it starts at three.
Here's where it starts at three. Right.
Yeah, and then the Canada now is off the top 10 because everything else has to slide down.
I see.
You understand?
Now, Copenhagen Summit is taking place at the moment.
Oh, the summit. For a minute, I thought you meant the chewing tobacco. I was like, yeah, I love it.
No, I meant the summit. It's something else over there.
One time, quick story. I'm spitting Copenhagen juice out of my mouth into a Snapple bottle, right? But it looks brown. My brother-in-law gets on my boat after water skiing. He gets on my boat.
Please
he's thirsty.
No. Please no.
And he's like, oh, Snapple.
No.
And before I could say, hey, Tommy, don't do it. He's taking a swig of my spit. It was hysterical.
How did that?
Hysterical. Won't let him live it down.
How did Tommy react to that?
Hysterical.
How did Tommy?
Oh, he yacked. Obviously, he yacked over the side of the boat. But he's a yacker anyway. He's one of those guys. He yacks. We hit a wave, he yacks. I mean, he's always yacking. Who knows? Anyway, go ahead. Global summit or something. What were you saying?
The global climate change summit is taking place in Copenhagen. It's been taking place for the last week.
Yeah.
Obama is over there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's funny.
He's still what the
I mean, we got so much crap going on here. He's over there talking about global summits.
Well, I mean,
if he was here, he would know how cold it is outside. What are you doing? It's global what? Warming my ass.
Oh boy.
My ass.
Okay.
I got 14 layers. I'm going to black.
Okay, so let's try and deal with this now. Global warming, it just because it's colder in the winter, it's winter now, so it will be colder.
I had to get one of my fur coats out of my cedar closet.
One of your
fur coats. One of my many fur coats.
Oh, boy. Please tell me it's not a polar bear coat.
No, that's disgusting. Oh, it's good. A seal coat.
Oh, come on.
Don't get carried away. Before it was bad to kill seals.
When was that?
Like 2-3 years ago, before it was a big deal. And it's not like we clubbed them or anything. It's not like we used a crowbar.
What did you do?
It was a sword. Very sharp sword.
A sword?
1-2 swings, the thing's dead. It's an Eskimo tradition. I used to date an Eskimo. Well, I thought actually she was Mexican. She looked like an Eskimo.
I really would like to confront, on behalf of the future of the planet, this idea that there is no global warming because it's cold outside in December here.
Right. Look, I'm not going to get into the reality of the conspiracy, but I could tell you this.
Yes.
Let's say Tipper Gore, what's that guy's name?
Al Gore.
Yeah, chubby guy. Let's say he's right about all his stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't see that movie just because, I don't know. I think 300 was on or something. Why would I watch a guy who's out of shape when I can watch 300 guys in shape?
Incredible shape.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really,
have you seen that, Andy?
300.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are pumped.
Look, one of those guys shows up, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Not blow him?
Yeah.
Let's say Al Gore is right.
Yeah.
Okay? People are scared. They say, we're going to die because the world's going to heat up.
Yes.
And this is what they always say in the apocalypse. The only thing that's going to be left are rats and cockroaches. Humans are the third thing. We're like rats and cockroaches. We're not like the snow leopard. We're not like the elephant. We don't need special environments to live. We can live underwater. We can live on land. We can live in the air. We can live on the moon.
We can't do anything.
We're an adaptable species, just like rats and cockroaches.
No.
We will eat whatever it takes to survive. We will live wherever it takes to survive. Personally, my guess is Bayonne, New Jersey is going to be fine. I won't have to move. If other places go on the water, move Midwest. Big deal. So we'll put some Olive Gardens in the Midwest. Everybody will be fine,
Does wherever Jersey moves, does that become Jersey? Is that like your theory of
Absolutely.
Maths from before?
I mean, if Jersey goes on the water, the next state over, Pennsylvania, boom, New Jersey.
American, thank you. I guess is the right phrase. Thank you for joining us.
Fellas, I have to say, Happy New Year. God bless you and your families.
Okay, thank you.
Salute.
Salute, and salute to you.
Have a very American Christmas.
And remember, and listen, guys, Andy, I know you're a Jew, but anything you need for Christmas or something, you just give me a ring. You have my direct number.
Yeah, okay.
Don't give that out, by the way, but that'll get you things.
Thank you, American. Civilization taking a significant step backwards news now. David Bahati, the MP for Ndora West in the Ugandan Parliament, has, and I don't make this statement lightly, Andy, acted like a of Nick Griffin proportions. He has sponsored Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill, which is so horrific, you find yourself rereading it to check that it's not a spectacular piece of Swiftian-level satire. Does it criminalise homosexuality? Oh, yes, but it does so much more. Does it propose executing gay people? Indeed it does, but that's just the tip of this reactionary iceberg. This sour, sour iceberg. Merely proposing executing gay people would be far too tolerant. This bill also retains provisions which require that if someone knows that someone is engaging in homosexuality, that person is to report them to the police within 24 hours or face fines and or up to a 3-year prison sentence themselves. In other words, it wants to set up a system of gay whistleblowers, which is, when you think about it, a very gay-sounding phrase.
I want some ethical consistency from this guy, John, because he's basically saying that homosexuality is unnatural, therefore punishable by death.
Yeah.
But if he thinks that's basically what is natural is heterosexual procreation, any carnal act that is not specifically aimed at a sperm fertilising an egg should be punishable by death. I want to see compulsory hanging for anyone who plamentiates their goober on their on their partner's cranketters. I want the same justice for everyone. God did not give that the green light in the Bible.
Wait, it gets stupider. The bill also extends jurisdiction to acts committed outside Uganda by Ugandan citizens. In other words, if a Ugandan citizen is known to be in a gay relationship outside the country, he will risk lifetime imprisonment or death upon his return. So you can't even leave to be gay. A Ugandan can't just not be gay in Uganda. They can't be gay anywhere. Surely that's as stupid as it gets, right? Oh, wrong! It also provides for compensation for victims of homosexuality. That is tailor-made to have gay couples who've broken up running to the police to see who is going to get immunity from prosecution and a cash bonus reward and who's going to get executed. That takes the terms tough breakup to a whole new level.
Now, the BBC ran an online debate on this topic, and their big banner headline was simply the words, "Should homosexuals face execution?" Which, out of context on the BBC website, caused a bit of a stir, as you can imagine.
A terrible, terrible piece of journalism.
Well, they were trying to be provocative and illustrate quite how extreme the debate in Uganda is. And
they succeeded in the first part of that.
It makes a bit of a change from the usual questions on the BBC website, such as, which celebrity should wing Strictly Come Dancing? Or, do you like oranges? Incidentally, the correct answer to the question, should homosexuals face execution, is, of course, no. And the only reason it would be acceptable to answer yes is if you misheard the question as, what band was formed in 1968 by John Anderson and Chris Squire and became well-known in the 70s for their symphonic rock style, led by the keyboard player of Rick Wakeman? That is the only time you can answer yes.
As well as bullshit legality, this bill also features some bullshit science, saying at one point that same-sex attraction is not an innate and immutable characteristic. Have they never seen George Clooney, Andy? Or Colin Farrell as Mr. Darcy getting out of the lake after a swim? I challenge them to sit through that scene without thinking, chaps, I think this bill may have been a mistake.
Colin Firth, I think you're meaning, John, not Colin Farrell.
Oh, yeah, Colin Farrell getting out of the lake would have been horrible. I do mean Colin Firth. Colin Farrell getting out of the lake would have just been obnoxious. He tried to get out in a cool way. Wouldn't have had that effortless sexuality of Firth.
Mr. Bahati, incidentally, who received a master's degree from Cardiff University. There's a little stab about him. Apparently he attended a conference in Uganda held by anti-gay US Christian evangelists who have promised to wipe out homosexuality.
Right.
I don't know what God would think about that, given that he clearly put it on the planet. He also maintains, Mr. Bahati, that he won't be swayed by pressure from the international community. And he said the potential of homosexuality to destroy our family is so huge that if you don't act now, in the coming years, our society will be finished.
Oh, you.
Is he worried that homosexuality is a dominant gene? And as the homosexuals rampantly breed, they will wipe out the heterosexual gene entirely?
The more you try...
Slight flaw in his logic.
The more you try to find a rational argument in this, the more ludicrous it gets. The Uganda's president, Yoweri Museveni, like President Mugabe in Zimbabwe, regularly likes to claim that homosexuality is a decadent import to Africa from the West. That is simply not true. If anything, it's the opposite. Because if anyone started homosexuality, it was Africa. Because Africa started humanity. Humans all came from Africa, and so the first gays would have been right there. Two early men looking at each other and saying, "You look nice. Thank you. You look nice too. Let's do this thing."
But it's interesting, John, this theory that homosexuality is threatening Ugandan society. I think we should investigate this further. So let's find out if it's true with our What's to Blame for the State of Uganda multiple choice quiz question. And the question is, Uganda is a nation which has ample natural resources, a propitious climate for agriculture and fertile land, and massive mineral deposits, including gold and copper, as well as my brother's camera that was stolen when he went there on a holiday after university. And yet, despite all these things in its favour, it remains one of the world's poorest nations. More than three-quarters of the population live on less than $2 a day. So what is the main reason for Uganda's ongoing social problems and poverty?
Okay.
Is it A, the ongoing civil war between the government and the Lord's Resistance Army that's been rumbling and bumbling along since 1987? B, piss-poor economic mismanagement going back decades. C, massive endemic corruption at all levels of government and government getting involved in other wars in Central Africa, including the devastating war in the Congo. Or D, gays.
D! When you put it like that, it becomes clear.
It seems like a slightly unnecessary piece of legislation, because already in place, there is a maximum sentence of life imprisonment for being gay anyway.
My God.
Is death really going to be any more of a discouragement? Bugle Christmas section now, and, well, happy Christmas from a lapsed Jew, if that means anything.
Technically it means nothing.
Basically what I mean is, just have...
Have a nice time.
I just hope you're generally happy.
Yeah.
On all days, whether they be Christmas or not.
Yeah.
And we'll start this with a special Christmas arts review.
Mm-hmm.
With a special review of the hit Christmas production of this period.
Yeah.
The 12 Days of Christmas production at my daughter Matilda's nursery, which I went to yesterday. And,
great. How was it, Ant?
2 stars.
Oh, come on.
It was
really?
It was a disappointingly unadventurous production, John, which failed to fully engage its willing audience and doubly failed to coax a convincing performance from its young cast. In fact, the reliance on 2 to 3-year-olds as the main chorus, always a risk in theatre, backfired spectacularly. Several of the children failed to join in the singing or burst into tears or spent most of the time excavating their noses or simply appeared baffled by the stodgy, static staging which required them to be sat on their little chairs throughout, intermittently making hand signals. 6 geese laying being particularly unrepresentative, matched only for inaccuracy and meaningless obtuseness by the 10 lords of leaping effort. And the 3 French hens manoeuvre was borderline racist. No wonder the cast seemed to rebel against the strictures of the overweening direction and amuse themselves by waving at their parents or pointing at stuff. The chosen feature number itself is a terpsichorean concoction of little merit, musically derivative, repetitive to the point of anaesthesia, with scant thematic development or character interest. Moreover, it stands as a paean to the kind of rampant commercialism and bare-bald consumerism that many feel has desecrated the famous old Christian festival and also destroyed the foundations of British childhood. Is this really the kind of message we want to be sending to our youngsters? And more specifically with this production, is this the kind of message we want them to be discordantly sending to us? The lighting consisted of the standard daily illumination in the nursery, bright and harsh, and failed to create any sense of atmosphere or establish a context to lend meaning and emotional weight to the song. However, tacked on to the end, has felt as little more than a distinctly unrequested encore, was the surprising highlight of the production. A starkly cursory rendition of We Wish You a Merry Christmas. This fully redeemed the show. The only musical accompaniment was sparse and chaotic tambourines, randomly battered and thwacked by the children in a withering satire on the failure of humanity to communicate with itself in the high-pitched, strident political age of today. In fact, a number of the children were, it seems, deliberately not joining in, refusing to wish the audience a Merry Christmas, highlighting how selfish it is of our affluent societies to even attempt merriment at a time of global unrest, poverty and pain. This was a tremendous blast at the emptiness of modern life and the unfathomability of human existence.
Wow. How was Matilda's performance, Andy?
Well, John, I'd say it was not a patch on my showbiz debut as Mrs. Noah. But Mrs. had to wear a purple dress.
Yep. At
the age of 5. It was a bit embarrassing. It was in all-boys school, you see, so...
It's interesting. My opening performance, with 5-year-old John Oliver in Birmingham, was a Shepherd Number 3. In the nativity, abiding on a gymnasium crash mat. Only one line for me that afternoon. Lo, a star. But what a line. Someone had to spot that star, Andy, and then lo it. And it wasn't going to be Shepherds 1, 2 or 4, I can tell you that. It was going to be Shepherd Number 3. The catalyst for the greatest story ever told. Huge role and one that required a big performance. And it got it that afternoon.
And little did they know that just 30 years later, those words would prove to be prophetic. Lo, a star of the big screen.
No!
An award-winning film.
Technically, yes.
Also, part of the Christmas section, it's a Christmas quiz question. Now, quiz questions have been all the rage at Christmas, ever since God boomed down to the manger. Is it a boy or a girl? Oh, phew. The Christmas question is, what are the following all got in common? Pope Adrian I, Suraj Mal, the Sinsiwar Jat ruler of Bharatpur, Emperor Taisho of Japan, W.C. Fields, the singer Johnny Ace, Charlie Chaplin, a Spanish painter Juan Miró, and soul legend James Brown. Do you know the answer?
Are they all dead?
Well, fractionally correct. The answer is, they all ruined Christmas. By dying on Christmas Day.
Oh, there you go.
A pope, honestly, a pope dying on Christmas Day.
Yeah, that
how
is
inappropriate.
Not good.
Cork That's it not till good. Easter next time. And, well, Johnny Ace, I think he's the man who most ruined Christmas. He died in 1954. He was a rock and roll star. And he ruined Christmas not just for himself and his family by dying, but for his fellow band members too, by shooting himself dead in the dressing room during a break between sets on a Christmas Day gig. Legend has it that he died in a game of Russian roulette, which he lost, and lost quite convincingly by all accounts. But the truth apparently is that he was just dicking around with his gun, as he liked to do, and said, "Don't worry, it's not loaded," and then attempted to confirm that by firing it at his own head. Unfortunately, he deconfirmed it. It was loaded, then it wasn't loaded. That was a bad Christmas for Johnny Ace. Your emails now, and this very moving email comes from Tim in Newfoundland. "God damn it, John and Andy. I've become a social outcast in my college library, and it's hands down your fault." Well, if there's any place you don't want to be a social outcast, it's the library, which is already a place of social outcastery. You square for even being there. "I was doing my usual routine, listening to a random episode of The Bugle whilst doing physics homework, when the unthinkable happened. I was in a semi-quiet part of the library reserved for reading books and studying, listening to episode 89 when my headphones were accidentally removed from the jack. The following sentence was broadcast across the highly populated study area of the library, through my speakers, at a high volume. You saying, 'That takes huge balls, Andy. Huge, leathery balls.' I scrambled to get the headphone jack into its rightful position, but the damage was already done. My question to you is this," says Tim. "Where do I go from here? How do I regain the illusion of intelligence I once held among my college peers?" You can't.
It's
You've
gone.
Got to accept
I'm afraid
that.
There's no... It's gone. It was... just act like it was never there, because it is a memory. It's an echo in a long-distant past.
I'm afraid your career in physics is over.
You don't come back from that.
All but name. And you don't deserve to. Well, physics doesn't really work anyway, so, I mean, you're better off out of it. I'll get a proper job.
Unlucky, Tim. Unlucky. I'd apologise, but it wasn't my fault. I'm sorry, Tim. I'm sorry. Good luck in whatever new career you're forced to go into.
We had a series of emails coming from a bugler who has been in the Copenhagen conference. Well, they did sign his emails. We're not sure. We want to give his name out just in case he gets in trouble.
Thank you for the emails, though.
They've been excellent.
Mystery bugler.
Yeah.
It's good to have a bugler on the inside, like a Trojan horse as well.
Let's call him Mr. X. And Mr. X writes, "Dear John and Andy, I will be briefing members of the European Parliament when they are here in the Copenhagen Climate Change Conference. But I haven't yet met this Nick Griffin you referred to last podcast. Could you perhaps provide some helpful information on how to recognise him?" Well, yeah, there's just a general kind of fog of hatred around him. It's like a kind of a cloud.
There's got lots of people in his vicinity acting like there was a particularly unpleasant sulphurous smell around.
"And also tell me what line of argument I might pursue in discussing global warming with him. But I found your previous show wildly accurate and scandalously informed." Well, that must have been accidental.
I'm sorry about that.
Anyway, we then got a follow-up email from the same Mr. X. "Dear Andy and John, another unasked-for update from Copenhagen. Nick Griffin showed up to my briefing for MEPs, much to my surprise. Came in late, never opened his mouth. How disappointing. I even had my iPhone recording it just in case." We've got a little picture of Nick Griffin being less offensive than usual by virtue of not opening his mouth.
So as a degree of separation, the bugle is only through Mr. X is one degree of separation from the biggest in the world.
I can't steady on, John.
No, you're right. He's not the biggest in the world, but he is a
You know, at the Olympics, he is carrying our national flag. Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to win gold in his judging event.
You're right. That's beautifully put.
This is the third email. "Dear John and Andy, Hugo Chavez just finished a couple of minutes ago."
Oh, that's phenomenal. Oh my God, that's amazing.
"I took more or less verbatim notes for you, knowing your appreciation of all things, Hugo." So he's highlighted some bits of Chavez's speech from the 16th of December, including, "I promise I won't talk more than the others this afternoon." That's clearly going to be a lie. I do hope, Mr. X, that you were playing Chavez bingo here, because he pretty much filled it out straight away. "There's an imperial dictatorship. Down with them. Long live people of equality. Bing, bing, bing. There is no democracy in the world. Here we once again see the world imperial dictatorship. There's a ghost lurking," and Karl Marx said, "a ghost running through the streets of Copenhagen, and that ghost is silent in this room, coming through the corridors, underneath, and that ghost is terrible. No one wants to name it. Can you guess what it is, John? Can you guess what it is? No, it's capitalism."
Oh, tick, 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 tick.
Then, wait, so the rich, who's destroying the planet, John? The rich are destroying the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps they think they'll go to another one when they destroy this, but I can't see anyone on the horizon of the galaxy for the time being. So it was a classic, classic Chavez.
Mr. X, he basically saw a real-life bugle unfold in front of him. He had Griffin, he had Chavez. If he had Berlusconi and Ahmadinejad there, it would have literally been like watching the bugle happen in front of his eyes.
At the end of Chavez's speech, he said, "Let us ensure this birth is not the tomb of mankind, but peace and light and fraternity for all the human race. Thank you and enjoy your lunch."
Oh, that is wonderful.
So thank you very much, Mr. X. Outstanding series of
thank
emails.
You. Thank you so
well
much.
Well done for being there as history avoided being made. Bugle Sport now. No time for sport. We've crapped on a far too much length about other stuff. I can't believe we're finishing the decade with no sport, John.
That is amazing, isn't it? Well, big surprise.
But I guess, you know...
It's in our hearts.
All right.
I consider life to be a sport.
I will do this on air. I will do this on air. Pick your favourite sporting moment from the last 99 Bugles.
Oh.
Well, I mean,
there's... One shot.
Lots to choose from. Lots to choose from. Plaxico Brest getting shot in the leg. Boom.
He didn't get shot in the leg. He shot himself.
Shooting himself. That's right. It's got to be. It's just got to be. From... I know technically it wasn't sport. It was self-harm. But... And slapstick self-harm and that, but still, I think he really contributed to the world of sport.
Andy, there has been some phenomenal cricket since the Bugle's been around.
Yeah, I think I'll still go with Plaxico Brest shooting himself in the leg.
Good choice!
I will too, there we go.
There you go, it's the hat-trick Plaxico!
He's the Bugle sportsman of the decade.
I hope that takes the edge off Christmas in jail.
So that's it for the Bugle this
decade.
Well, yeah, some people technically say the decade doesn't end until the end of next year. They can all off. I mean, I know they're technically correct, but they can still off. It's when the number changes. It's a psychological thing, not a factual thing.
Be reasonable.
The millennium wasn't in 2001. It was when it became started beginning with two, you losers.
Come on, leave your
maths at the door and put some real shoes on. We'll just leave you with a final prediction of the decade. And this prediction, John, for this week's 99th Bugle is... Because we're not doing one next week, obviously, because that'll be Christmas Day and that would be, well, sacrilege.
Yeah.
For all our Jewish listeners who just want to spend the day thinking, ah, we ballsed up there. and the prediction is, at New Year's Day, John, yeah. What is my first thought going to be on waking up in the year 2010? Is it going to be, oh, great, it's a general election year? Or is it going to be, oh, great, it's a World Cup year?
World Cup, Andy. I'm so excited.
You know me too well. So that's it for 2009 and the first decade of the year. At the start of next year, we're taking a couple of weeks off, but on the 4th of January, in the build-up to the 100th episode, there will be a Best of the First 99 Bugles special episode. You can only imagine how good that will be. That is going to be potentially fatally good. We mentioned this a long time ago on the Bugle. If you listen to all the Bugles back-to-back now, it would take around about 60 hours...
That's chilling.
And that, I think, would definitely be...
2.5 days, that would finish you off.
That would finish you off physically and psychologically. More importantly, psychologically.
And then the week after that, on the 11th, there is a Bugle music special. And that's not actually a joke. There's going to be all the greatest musical hits of the Bugle mixed together for you to dance to.
All the remixes you've sent in. And John's random bits of singing in an effort to get cast in a Disney film. To resurrect... his flagging career. And then the big one. On the 18th, Monday the 18th of January, the big one.
100!
100th Bugle.
The centenary.
The showbiz event of the millennium so far, without question. Happy Christmas, Buglers. Give a shit about Christmas. If not, you know, just have a nice week.
Yeah.
And a nice new year, if you go with the Christian calendar.
Have a lovely holiday season, Buglers. Thank you, Mr. X. Safe trip back.
Farewell.
Cheerio!
For the best in sport, comedy, science and books, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.